After all this, you still...
I still want that gas, yes. And you had better deliver.
Takes all the guesswork out. And it's looking like, I don't know, if Twitter does collapse, I don't really have any intention to go onto another platform, but what do you think's the most likely scenario? Is everyone going to migrate to Tumblr? Is Mastodon really going to be, you know?
No, I honestly don't know. I feel like someone's just going to have to, like, create a new... I mean, I know Mastodon is already kind of that, but I think someone's just going to have to create a new, almost identical platform.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's probably what would happen, is, like, Musk maybe tanks the shit, but Fumble's owning the IP for, like, the actual Twitter tool.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, yeah, everyone will just probably port themselves over and pretend that didn't happen.
Yeah, I think that's what'll happen.
Yeah. I mean, on the flip side, though, like, I started seeing, like, product sales as tweets for the first time, like the way you would on Instagram or Facebook or something. And it's like, we have a sale going on this. I don't know. The item was like a record player.
Yeah.
That ends in 24 hours. And I'm like, oh, yep. Platform's gone to shit. Let's go.
Right.
All right. Well, hey, folks. Death of Twitter aside, it's another episode of Greenhouse Gaslighting. Joining me today is co-host Josh.
Glad to be on again. I've been looking forward to this eagerly.
Right, because, you know, I think last year I was a bit more ambivalent about doing an election breakdown, but... this was, once again, the most important election of our lifetimes. And I'm actually curious to, you know, consider how the center will hold, as long as people continue to say that about elections. But this, the red wave hypothesis has been fundamentally broken down at this point, hasn't it?
100%. I mean, it was, you know, red wave, red tsunami, whatever they wanted to call it, that collapsed. And it was weird. It was a weird feeling on election day. I remember, like, for me, the first sign that, like, things were going to be weird was from, of all people, Charlie Kirk. There was, like, these things where there was, like, I was seeing, like, clips from the show where he's just having this meltdown about Arizona, where he's like, you're gonna need, like, 10 times the votes you're getting. I'm like, the Arizona, and Arizona was considered, like, probably almost certainly going to be going for Kari Lake, but I think, you know, last I checked, I don't think it's been called officially yet, but it has. I mean, it, she doesn't really have a path to victory at this point. It's looking incredibly unlikely.
This has been a much closer midterm season than I initially gambled. With the Senate, I think we still have the runoff in Georgia pending.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I was gonna say it doesn't matter. It does matter, but there's some interesting things with that one where, you know, because it'll determine if the Democrats have like a 51 seat majority, but the control of the Senate is no longer really up for grabs, which I think is gonna really demobilize the Walker voters out there, which were already like kind of like they were carried by like up ballot races, right? Like the Brian Kemp race, clearly got way more turnout than Walker did. The fact that, like, you know, you're going to lose a lot of money that might have been pumping into that race if it was going to decide control of the Senate again. And another interesting implication with it is, assuming Warnock wins, this will actually be the very first Senate race, like, cycle, where every incumbent senator won re-election.
Which is... Yeah, this is, there's definitely some weird firsts with this election.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, I don't know, like, I'll admit I was initially pessimistic at first. I was really expecting Democrats to get crushed. And for them to have actually made certain gains in certain states and in other places kind of just hold the center was a welcome surprise, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it looks like rather than gain ground, we're now at like a new stage of gridlock. And like we mentioned with the Senate, you know, the Senate is broadly going to be either a 50, like a very slim majority, or tied. The House also, I mean, there's like, what, 15 races still to be called or something like that?
Something like that. It's looking like, you know, Republicans are likely going to take the House, but with like the narrowest of majorities. And, you know, I tell my students a lot that, like, you know, John Boehner speakership, which is really kind of when we saw like the GOP just kind of like just fully drink the Kool-Aid, right?
Right.
He could not control that caucus with a much more sizable majority. I am skeptical that Kevin McCarthy can control. I mean, already we're seeing like Matt Gaetz saying he's not going to support him. Other people saying they're not going to support Kevin McCarthy as well. I mean, they're going to have a real leadership battle where you could even end up with somehow you could even end up with Democrats in the minority with Speaker Pelosi somehow still, just because of like some weird coalition that might form because of how like kind of ungovernable that caucus is.
Right. And it's, I guess, like, you know, you have to look at the midterms as like the affirmation of your predictions or the rejection of those, right? And mm-hmm. try to use that as like a, you know, moment to like analyze the moment again. And I think it's like, there has definitely been a repudiation of like certain right-wing extremist views. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
Definitely nothing changing the status quo either. So we're still in this like bizarre, like hold the center as long as we can kind of vibe. But a point that, and this is just the angle I'm going to start with, because there's a lot of angles to break down these results with. I think in an earlier episode, we were talking about how Biden's overall approach to the midterms was to kind of distance himself from the rest of the party as much as possible and let various state candidates swim or sink independent of him.
And to be fair, like I'll just interject into that. That's sort of the secular approach, right? That's always mm-hmm. like midterms. I mean, you know, I think you've shared a few memes with me, at least, with like some of the Obama era, right? Where like, you know, that's when you got in, like, you know, Democrats that won during like Obama or like Joe Manchin, right? Like right. they were like, who's like, you know, shooting the cap and trade bill, like the signature piece of Obama administration legislation. And like all this stuff, like you have like during the midterm, it's always like the president, they're punished through their party. And so they don't want to, you know, like the members of the party don't generally want the president like campaigning with them and whatnot. And, you know, certainly like, you know, some of the traits of that were still here, I think, you know, like Biden has low approval rating comparatively. But again, like, I think we're kind of past the point of approval rating necessarily mattering. It's going to always be, I think, underwater for every president going forward until like there's some substantial cultural change in this country where mm-hmm. there's a little less polarization. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, Biden definitely was not necessarily, you know, putting himself front and center of most of these races.
Right. And like, I think I sent that video to you of him congratulating various governors who won their races and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the equivalent, like the caption of it was the guy who did nothing in the group project and still gets an A.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That definitely seems to be the kind of W Brandon is collecting for this one. But I definitely say that, you know, they flew by the seat of their pants on this one. But I don't know if it's safe to call this a W for the Democrats, but they definitely, you know, got saved by the skin of their teeth is how I'm feeling about this.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like it. You know, like criticizing Biden's approach, I think is fair. I mean, and criticizing the party in general, right? I think that like,
I'd be out of a job if I didn't do that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, I definitely think that they didn't like, you know, that's not really going to be the emphasis of this episode, but I think that, you know, like I was worried about the midterms because I felt that they did a poor job with like a national message. And I think, you know, even like, you know, on the abortion issue, you know, Michigan, like, yes, it was on the ballot and that was a big part, but like, Gretchen Whitmer did not like let up on that issue, right? You know, she didn't let, you know, her opponent hide her on like, well, you know, governors don't really have anything to do with abortion, which is completely dishonest. you know, she didn't let up on that, but like, I think elsewhere you kind of saw them like, well, like, you know what, Leah, let's just accept that there's a crime wave and say that I'm going to run against the crime wave too. Like, I think I found, there was one study that I saw that, more Democrats actually took the tough on crime narrative than Republicans and stuff like that. And, you know, when you concede to their narrative, you get stuff like in New York where they lost pretty awfully. Florida too, though Florida is kind of, you know, what, how inspiring is, like, you know, the political chameleon that is Charlie Crist going to be for, you know, anyone for that matter, let alone Democrats.
Yeah, and it's like that particular point goes to show just how much of a, even if they didn't lose badly this midterm cycle, Democrats are still somewhat prostrate to how they've been perceived by certain people on the right.
Yeah.
Post, you know, the 2020 protest wave and shit like that. So they're still like not coming out as like proto New Dealers the way that certain op-ed columnists would have decreed earlier last year.
What, even we're still seeing some of them do it, and of course the emphasis on quote unquote extreme candidates. There's a you know, pardon the analogy, there's a colored approach to who they consider to be extreme.
That's also correct. Yeah. So I mean, I'm trying to figure out because this is a big fucking fish to fry. So I guess, yeah, overall results, Democrats do win by the skin of their teeth, but barely. We're going to be looking at a gridlocked House and Senate.
Well, I think the Senate will probably be better off. And like, one of the things that's going to change its gridlock is that, like, there's just going to be less legislation from the House, right? So, like, mm-hmm. they're going to be able to focus more on appointments. Yes, there might be some weird ones that kind of, you know, have issues like there was in the first term. I think, God, what was that one big fight over? It wasn't HUD. Doesn't really matter. But, you know, you might get some appointment battles and stuff like that. But, yeah. You know, I think the Senate's going to be interesting. The House, you're going to, I mean, it's going to be, and we'll see, right? I mean, are we going to get, like, you know, Hunter Biden laptop committee? Are we going to open that up to the public? Are we just going to, like, basically just stream revenge porn of Hunter Biden, you know, with prostitutes and stuff like that for the nation to see? Like, I don't know. I mean, like, it's going to be really weird.
I'm betting 50 on that right now. I'm pretty sure that's going to come up.
Well, it's funny too, because I mean, like, I think one of the things that, like, Republicans were tended to be punished for this midterm cycle is just, like, kind of like the vapidness of, like, conservatism, and just, like, we're like even like Tudor Dixon, right? It's like, you know, like weeks before the election is like, well, you know, COVID was actually manufactured by Democrats in revenge for losing the Civil War. And it's like, what? Like, it's like, I don't think that, like, you know, oh, hey, this candidate is on like the same 4chan threads that I'm on. I don't know if that's really a winning message.
Right.
And like the Hunter Biden thing, it's like they've lost the plot on that. There was like kind of a point about, like, you know, the efficacy of, like, you know, people benefiting off of, you know, their, you know, family and government and, you know, sort of getting positions that are, you know, international. Like, ooh, is he like trading national secrets to, like, you know, make more money? Like that, you know, that's, there are like red flags that are raised, but they've like changed that to like, oh, well, like, you know, this guy,
he's a degenerate pervert.
Yeah. It's really like, he does lines of cocaine. Like, look at this picture of him in a threesome. Like, what a wacko. Like, it's like, honestly, like, this seems to be a better fit for your, like, alpha male theology than, like, anyone else you're putting up. Like, I mean, why, like, I mean, everyone's talking about, like, are we gonna get, you know, Trump Biden 2024? Why not Biden 2024? You know, I mean, like, I think they found their guy.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. And, like, the way I've been trying to process the way these midterms played out to me is, like, I still think the suburban strategy is in effect for both parties. I still mm-hmm. think the culture war is the dominant terrain, as we've been talking about, right?
Yeah.
But I think, like you mentioned, you know, once Republicans get their goal of like trying to make wins only on the cultural front, like they've been doing the past couple months, especially with the abortion issue, like one, it exposes like they have really nothing to do after the point other than like the cultural shit, which for the average suburban voter who like is concerned about like again, not that I support the angle, but the way that there's a resurgence of tough on crime rhetoric, you know, that appeals to that crowd. When you have
the crowd who's, you know, far from the inner cities that are exactly rampant with crime.
Right. Exactly. So like I feel like that at least speaks to that crowd in some capacity. Then you have the economic front, you know, and middle class like voters have their set of priorities they prefer with that, which is, you know, not in my backyard usually. And then you've got just like this general like revulsion to like unseemly shit, right? And not that that's inherently a bad thing, but then that means like you have these bizarre instances of, you know, this cohort being repelled by Trump, not by any, you know, particular ideology of his, but really because he's, you know, unpleasant. And then that also leads to the same cohort who's also like, I think the protest wave in 2020 was too far. They shouldn't have done any of that. And that's not how you bring up your grievances to society. I think it's the same cohort, right?
Right. Well, and like, you know, that cohort, like, I mean, you know, it's hard. I think it's probably pretty difficult to necessarily like have the intellectual dissonance to be like, those protesters, you know, in the wake of George Floyd went too far, and not think like, oh shit, these people that stormed the Capitol building.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, any argument that you could have had to keep pointing at like, oh, well, you know, look at these people that were like, you know, rioting in the city and whatnot. And, you know, maybe that's more close to home. But like you also like these same people are also like, you know, like I wanted to personally invite the people who did this into my office to like, you know, congratulate them on overthrowing the government. Like, you know, that's, it's hard to like necessarily unravel that as like not being just as bad, if not worse, if you're in that mindset.
100%, right? And I think like basically what you can say about this cohort in a nutshell is like, they don't like the drama per se.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's the best way to say it, but it's like,
well, I think that for them, they want politics to not be like important or visible, really.
Exactly. They want to grill. And I think like that's the overall animus behind suburban voters this cycle. You know, they saw the right, you know, either not deliver for them in terms of like you know, property taxes or whatever shit they care about. They didn't see anything like
well, I think too, like you had, I feel like this whole cycle was very policy light.
Exactly.
Like, and I think that's why like abortion was so poignant, right? You know, it's not like, you know, yes, it's reproductive rights. All that stuff's important to a lot of people, and not to undermine that. But I think that like on both parties, it was really the only thing that was like a clear identifiable policy line, right? You know, looking at in Michigan, for example, right? That was, I think, the clearest thing on both candidates' platform was abortion good, abortion bad. There was like talk about education, but like, I don't think either of them really had a good like sense of communicating what they wanted. They're like, oh, well, we'll pursue efforts to boost literacy rates. It's like, okay, well, like what efforts?
Exactly.
Let's not talk about that. Let's, you know, like the policy end was pretty, you know, open. Whereas, you know, abortion, a lot more, you know, like, yeah, like, do we think that you have a fundamental right to, you know, have bodily autonomy and whatnot over your reproductive organs? And that's kind of, I think that's one reason why it was a big winner. And it's in some ways it should serve as like somewhat of a wake up alarm to a lot of these politicians, right? Is that like, you can't run on nothing. And I think on the right in particular, they saw that like the reason they ran on nothing, even on abortion in some cases, was that they're like, what we want to run on is deeply unpopular.
Right. But it's the only thing that generates fervor for the base at this point.
Yeah.
Right. And I think this is, I think the thing I was trying to say so shittily these past couple minutes was like, this is a cohort of people that resents fervor of any kind. You know what I mean? They don't want to see it. And then the right that is effervescent right now is for like something that like is, you know, it's the deeply unpopular. There's no one else they can flip on it. I mean, hell, like we talked about this last time, but they ran out of like the usual pro-life arguments. Everyone that they wanted to convince on it, it's already been convinced or mm-hmm. doesn't care. So they had to lie about, oh, Prop 3 in Michigan, for example, was it's too complicated. It's too complicated. Don't vote for it. And it's one of the most modest proposals on reproductive rights I've ever read.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically just a codification of Roe, which is kind of weird, too, because I think it's, you know, the when you, for midterms, we usually kind of see them like punish the incumbent party for like, so quote unquote, policy overreach. But really, it was overturning Roe that was the big policy overreach that people responded to.
Right, right. Because like, I don't think something like on-demand abortion would have the level of popularity that Prop 3 had, for example, like just as a hypothetical.
Well, and it's hard too, because like for it to have that popularity, because, you know, for years, you know, the Democratic, like the average Democrat was like, well, I think abortions should be safe and legal, but rare.
Right, right. That's the popular consensus. So like something like that, which I guess by the constraints of our system would be deemed extreme, right? Mm-hmm. That wouldn't make it to the mainstream. But then like Republicans to basically backdoor this way through the courts and create one just like a very rabid fervor. Like, I think the phenomenon that me and you didn't pay attention to, just because like it doesn't tie into our daily lives, but probably for other people it does, right? Is all these like school board meetings getting like hostily taken over by like culture warriors, not even in a coherent way, but just to like talk about some benign or asinine thing as like an example of grooming, whatever that means now.
Mm-hmm. Like I found the Kama Sutra in my son's elementary library, you know, like total bullshit, but you know, it's just like whatever they can come up with to like kind of you know, suggest that like they're being groomed for the sexual deviances of their mentors and whatnot. I don't know.
Yeah. So like I feel like definitely the suburban cohort was looking at this stuff and was like, shut this shit down. I don't want to see it. Regardless of how they feel about queer people.
Mm-hmm.
Was definitely on the, okay, this is too much even for me.
I mean,
the logic that won out.
Yeah, I mean, like, those people, it's like, yeah, like, they don't want to see the litter boxes in classrooms or, you know, whatever just convoluted, made-up thing is. But, like, I think that they did a bad job of convincing people that that lie was true. Because, right. Like, when you hear it, right, like, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, you're kind of curious, right? Like, if I told you, like, oh, hey, like, guess what I just installed in my classroom? Like, a litter box. Like, you're probably like, wait, what? Like, you know, you want to, like, there's a follow-up there, but they're just, like, you know, intellectually, like, incurious. Like, oh, yeah, like, 100%, there's, you know, your schools have litter boxes. Your son and daughter's classmates, they're, you know, taking a shit in the corner of the room. You know, probably your son or daughter is the one who has to clean it up at the end of the day. So, you know, really, you know, force that down your throat. But, like, just these weird things.
Just, I don't even know, like, what level of depravity you have to be at to spread those kinds of rumors, right? Like, what disease place are you coming from?
We should ask Joe Rogan.
Fucking hell. I really don't know, because on the one hand, like, it's also sad that like the reason why people didn't oppose these things, it wasn't rooted in anything.
It's not like rooted in their own personal morals or like,
yeah, you know, it's
they
not
want
rooted
to like
in
help these communities. It's like, no, they're just like, yeah, this sounds kind of stupid. I probably don't.
It's just like
it.
And I think like it creates this like. The kind of fervor that you want to have in like a progressive or left-wing context of like, hey, we can change society, we can make it more equitable, we can, you know, correct certain systemic injustices, those won't win out with this crowd. But then also, like, refreshingly, I won't say it's a good thing, but at least, like, you know, you can count on it, is like, when this stuff just like keeps making the airwaves and keeps getting it, rather than people buying into it, it's like, oh yeah, that's bullshit, I think people are also like, man, shut that shit off, I don't want to hear this.
Yeah.
And it doesn't lead to like what you would hope for, which is, you know, then a deeper interrogation of like, who is saying this shit and who are they trying to hurt? Because that's where I think people like us, where we step in and we're like, who the fuck is saying this and what agenda do they have? But I think most people don't go that far.
Well, and I think too, one of the weaknesses on, you know, from like our perspective, right, as far as like trying to persuade people these things, is a lot of the American public, you know, in particularly in that cohort, just doesn't care, right? I mean, I asked for my attendance question in class, I had to ask, you know, what race or election were they most interested in for like election day? Mm-hmm. There was a dude who put NASCAR. Like, no, not trying to roast the guy.
Dudes fucking rock. Dudes fucking rock. Let's go.
I'm not trying to, I'm not like besmirching the guy or anything, but like that shows like a profound, like, I am not invested in anything, right? I'm like, he probably doesn't even, he probably hasn't watched NASCAR at all, right? Like, he's just like, he's just being silly. Like, I'm just gonna put NASCAR. I don't give a shit about the governor race. I don't give a shit about Congress. Like, fair enough. You know, more power to you. Like, but that's, you know, that just, I think that's like, it's, people underestimate how much that like is reflective in the public, right? They just, they're not invested in these issues. They don't want to talk to you about them. Which I know sounds like we're like literally screwing into the void with that context, but yeah, it's just like there is this big sense of like apathy that they kind of want, like, just like, yeah, like I'll engage in this stuff when I want to and never outside of it.
Pretty much. I think speaking on consistently, and I don't know if there's been enough of like a breakdown of how this played out in this recent cycle, but like I still think voter apathy, even among people who vote regularly, right? I think people have this kind of like, okay, I bubbled in my shit and I turned it in, I'm not invested in the well-being of this particular party anymore, you know?
Sure.
And I it's like, I'm very curious about those perspectives, but I'm not sure, one, they fit the purposes of the Democratic Party, especially when like they need all hands on deck for their approach right now.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, I think the reporting and not necessarily all the studies done on US politics, but like some of it comes from people who still revere America and its institutions. So the concept of voter apathy is something like they find personally repugnant, and I feel like they might be just biased against considering it at some level.
I think it's a mix. Probably. Some people do that definitely see it as like inherently repugnant, right? And they don't necessarily, like, at least in academia, I feel like that crowd, it's like, you know, you can sort of split it, but I think, you know, generally most people in that crowd are like, it's repugnant, these people are idiots, versus the follow-up of like, well, why are they apathetic? And, you know, right. And I don't necessarily think that, like, you know, I think it's probably overly optimistic to think that, like, well, if, you know, we gave them universal health care, they'd probably suddenly care.
Of course. Like, I think there's a deep individualism at the heart of American culture right now, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, there's factors like that that go into it, aside from just, oh, we don't have progressive policies and people don't care. Like, it is a little more complex than that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess final call, who's the biggest winner of the midterms? Who actually
Ron DeSantis.
Won? Ron fucking DeSantis.
I mean, that's kind of the pitchfork thing, but I mean, God, it's insane seeing like the outpouring of support for him. So, you know, Republicans are like, well, this is all Trump's fault. He nominated bad candidates, or he endorsed bad candidates, and like, it's weird too, because in a lot of cases, I hate to say this, that like, cause like, so Trump had this one kind of viral thing where he said that like, if the candidacy wins and win, if the endorsed win, he deserves all the credit, but if they lose, he deserves none of the blame, but he'll probably be the opposite, which, I mean, he was correct about that. But it's like, and I hate to say this, but it's like, I kind of on some level agree with him. I think that, like, you know, in a lot of cases, he just did what the party told him. Like, okay, like, endorse Oz. I don't think he endorsed him in the primary. I could be wrong, but, like, Dixon he endorsed in the primary. And the same people who are like, well, Trump cost us, you know, the election writ large. Those same people are like, let's put Dixon in charge of the MRP or the Republican Party of Michigan. It's like, what? Like, you're like, he endorsed shit candidates, but we want these shit candidates in positions of power. Even when the election's over. It's super bizarre. So, like, the establishment is sort of rallying behind DeSantis because DeSantis did really good in Florida. Basically, the Florida Democratic Party did not turn out. Again, I can't entirely blame them when, you know, Charlie Crist is who you're turning out for, right? Like, I get it, where you're just like, what's the point? A negative partisanship only goes so far, I guess. But, you know, I think, you know, we're likely, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, he's going to be kind of forced to run for president, I think, at this point. Seemingly against Trump. Trump is due to make an announcement tomorrow as of this recording, so we'll see.
Shit, we should set up the live stream. Just,
I don't know when he's doing it, though. That's the problem.
That's awesome. That's fucking awesome. I'm gonna make an announcement when I'm not fucking telling anybody. That's fucking awesome.
Well, apparently he wanted to I can't remember if it was the Pennsylvania rally or one of the others. But he was going to do it there, and like, and already those rallies completely upstaged the candidates on the ballot. And I think that's something that's being missed, too, from these like Republican analysis. Is it's like, I think that, like, you know, some of these candidates would have probably done worse without him, because he at least strikes a fervor with their like grassroots base. That, you know, I mean, do you think like a Trump voter without Trump's like placid endorsement of Dr. Oz would ever even like look twice at him?
So the thing that's getting me about all of this is the specter of Trump looms, but how large a shadow he casts really depends on one thing, and it's like how badly your brain was broken by 2016, right? Because, like, as you're saying all this, like, I'm starting to just remember, like, no, wait, what 2016 was like a repudiation of the Republican Party establishment.
Yeah.
And a realignment under Trump himself. And the whole point of Trump, like, yes, there were weird, like, crypto fascists in his administration. Yes, like, there was like a big far right push. Yes, like, there's these weirdos who fucking, like, turn out for him, and, like, his policies overall were just the worst excesses of American nationalism and neoliberalism run amok, right? However, the thing about the Trump years is that there's one guy at the center of it. It's him. The Republican Party works for Trump. Every candidate who wants to win during the Trump years is doing like a ritual worship of Trump in the primary. You know what I mean? Like, there were a bunch of, like, even just at the local level in the Trump years, right? Like, how many candidates did you see like do the little red border and the four stars above their name and write their names in bold like font to look like the Trump logo, right? So, like, we are in a bizarre stage where it's like, does the Republican Party do post Trump?
Well, and I would add too, like, the problem is like, it's not even really post Trump, because he's still around. He can still run again. It seems like
that's what I'm getting at is like the Republican establishment is trying to like eke themselves out of the rock they've been under this entire time, and like try to like get the reins back from Trump.
Yeah,
and not realizing the hold he still has. You know what I mean?
Right. And I was thinking about this before too, or like more recently, was that like, you know, when the Republican Party was all about, you know, the party of Reagan, let's emulate Reagan, like every candidate is Reagan, the second coming of Reagan, the third coming of Jesus Christ, all this stuff, you know, like they had the benefit of the fact that Reagan was either a vegetable or dead. You know, like he was gone. He, you know, like there's the myth of him and you can emulate that, but he himself was gone. Trump, I mean, even DeSantis, I mean, I showed my class. Wait,
didn't they already start beefing?
What was that?
Didn't Trump and DeSantis already start beefing?
Yeah, they already started beefing. But like, I remember when DeSantis ran for governor, he put out this ad that was like, you know, like his wife's like, oh, Ron loves Donald Trump, but he cares about other things too. And it's like him playing with his kid. And it's like, oh, build the wall and like let's read, you know. Art of the deal. Like, can you read this? Make America Great Again. It's just literally like indoctrinating his kid to love Trump. Let's change my body language to be like Donald Trump. You're trying to emulate a guy that you are going to run against. How does that work?
I'm worried for Ron DeSanctimonious. I'm real worried for him. Because whoever is in the Republican establishment being like, nah, bro, you got this. He's going to get wiped in that primary debate.
He's going to be completely rolled and it's going to be embarrassing. Like, he almost got rolled by Charlie Crist. Like, Crist! Like, he's just like, oh, are you going to run are you going to still be governor? Or are you going to run for president? And he's just like, you know, blue screen of death. Like, how, like, just.
He got rolled by kids wearing masks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I mean, there's that.
He does not know how to riff. And like, that's where, if you want to argue where Biden can hold his ground against Trump, Biden has that like Sopranos reject energy going on. You know what I mean? Where it's like,
I'd be worried about like a Biden DeSantis race, just because like,
oh, of course,
like you have a lot of like negatives. It's just like, well, like, hey, like this guy's younger, all that, but like at the same time, I mean, I think voters, they really don't like just naked ambition, which is like just
that's why Rubio didn't get as far as he did, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, and like, who's talking about Rubio for 2024? No one, not a soul is talking about this guy, and he was the great white savior of the Republican Party going into 2016, and no one talks about him now. No one cares about him. He's a non-entity. And he just won his Senate race in the same state as DeSantis. No one's saying like, oh, hey, like he won in a quote unquote purple state, which doesn't seem to be much the case anymore. We should really, you know, run with DeSantis, not Rubio. Like no one cares about him anymore. And like, even on the Democratic side, right, you know, I was telling my students today that like, honestly, the worst thing to happen to Kamala Harris's political career was becoming vice president. No one talks about her now in any way that's like remotely like, this is someone who like could be the future of our country. And that was the whole thing, was it was like heir apparent. And now it's like just this non-entity because she's ambitious. She flew too close to the sun.
So this raises two questions for me, both on the same tangent, right? Which is, yeah, like, both parties have basically gone into a midterm with no, like, you know, they put on a show for sure, but who really is like constituting the establishment of either party, who's like the whip hand in the relationships of those parties, is still like somewhat unclear, right? So on the Republican side, we've talked about the specter of Trump, even though like Trump doesn't really sit within the traditional machinery of the Republican Party. So the first question is like, what alternative force to Trump exists within the Republican Party after these midterms? Is there a new faction that is not intent on imitating him? Or conversely, I guess it doesn't matter for this example, because like with DeSantis, they are trying to imitate him. And then similarly on the Democratic side, right? We have this loose Confederacy under Biden. No one's challenging the old man's authority, but a lot of people think they could do a better job. That being said, I don't think there's anyone popular left within the Democratic coalition. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that there's definitely, you know, there's a vacuum there, like, if he goes away. I think it can be filled. I think I've seen a lot of people talk about how, you know, even close to home, someone like Whitmer could be someone who has, like, sort of, like, these, like, Midwest sort of, like, you know, ties to the working class. And I think, you know, particularly if, like, you know, as, like, you know, in Michigan, there was a sweep for the state House and Senate, you know, giving Democrats control of those for the first
time. Yeah, the Michigan Democratic Party did way better than the federal party overall.
Yeah, I mean, here
swept everything. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it was huge here. A lot of that comes down to Prop 3. But, you know, like, I think, you know, her campaign, I think, did a really good job. And I think, you know, they really, you know, pushed Prop 3 and I think sort of pushed back on that, you know, too confusing misinformation campaign and stuff like that. But, you know, I think, you know, someone like that, or was it Pritzker in Illinois? I can't remember if that's his name. He's another one.
God. Okay.
He's another one I've seen kind of float around, but like, there's not like, there's no one in like at the national level, like true national, like no one in Congress that I think, and part of that's because like the congressional leaders have just held on way too long. Right. You know, they've, you know, they're all in their 80s. They're spent, right? Pelosi, I was convinced, I've seen her speak recently after her, you know, husband's attack. I was once convinced that she was going to die in office. And to be fair, her husband's attacker probably was thinking the same thing. A little bit more proactive in that. But I could see her, you know, I don't know if she'll resign in this upcoming Congress, but I don't see her sticking around much longer.
I think that's a fair assessment, right? And even if she like does kick the bucket, it does like go to show like who there is no successor. Maybe that's something that like a Pete Buttigieg or a Kamala was competing for once upon a time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have any like real base of support. You know, you have these like candidates who become like a bit of a meme on Twitter. You know, so you have like the AstroTurf shit with like Pritzker or even like recently, you know, like, yeah, Fetterman became a bit of a meme, but I don't think he's presidential material at all. You could even.
No, like, I mean, even pre-stroke, I wouldn't say that.
Right, right. So it's like and I think like, again, I was a Bernard brother, but I don't see the old man making a comeback in 2024. I don't.
No, I mean, I know he's like flirted with it, but it's just like, again, it's like, and I think in his case, like, I don't know if it's a failure on his end that there's not like a name successor. I mean, that sounds kind of undemocratic, like when we like use that term, but like, there's no like clear heir apparent, right? Like, I mean, who's in the wings of even like the Bernie like sector of the party? You know, I guess like maybe AOC. I don't see her getting. I mean, I think she kind of has like the Clinton issues of like being this nationalized figure long before like those types of ambitions would manifest. And that kind of like, I mean, they've been essentially. I mean, look at how many campaign ads across the country tied, you know, candidates to AOC. Like, oh, this is, you know, they're part of this wing of the party, even if there's no evidence of that, right? And that's, you know, kind of the weird thing of like nominating moderates is like, you're like, well, it'll convince voters that, you know, we are, you know, not going to pursue those policies. It's like, it doesn't matter. Like, just nominate whoever you think is going to be like, I mean, if you truly believe those policies, just be upfront about it, right? Like, right. Yeah, like, I want, you know, I don't know who's some token moderate. I want Joe Manchin. I mean, he's probably too far on the other side of it, but like, I really want Joe Manchin because I agree with him politically over AOC, not because like, well, you know, if we nominate a socialist, they might, you know, attack them as a socialist. It's like, you know, if Joe Manchin ran for president, God forbid, like, he'll probably be pinned as a socialist. Maybe in his case, it might be a little bit more difficult, but you get my general meaning.
Right, right. Yeah, and it, like, again, the same phenomenon, albeit, you know, slightly different in flavor, does exist on the Republican side, where it's like we mentioned, Trump had totalized the entire Republican brand onto his personal brand.
Mm-hmm.
So even with issues like immigration, foreign policy, the economy, COVID, all that shit, it just became like, how does he aggrandize himself? How does he earn the adoration of you know, his base, basically, rather than provide any coherent alternative? And the other thing too is, like, as a result, Trump is not bound to the Republican machinery in the way that someone like DeSantis is, you know? So yeah, it just begs the question, like, you either have, like, Trump wannabes who are loyal to the Republican machinery in some way, but for, even if they do win their local or state races, having them compete on the national stage against Trump, I don't see them having the juice. Or yeah, you have, like, alternatives who were formerly influential in the Republican establishment, but again, have been rejected.
Time for the Jeb comeback.
Well, I mean, but that's what I'm saying, is like, 2016 was a repudiation of Jeb. It was a repudiation, yeah, of the Romneys. It was a repudiation of Rubio, all these guys.
And I mean, like, and that's the thing too, is it's like, the stuff that I'm hearing them say about Trump, I've heard it all before. I heard it all from him before in 2016. And they couldn't do anything, right? I mean, like, there's some things that are different, right? I mean, like, think of how appalled they were that, like, and, you know, speaking of repudiations of, like, the Romneys, when Trump basically ran against every, like, Republican nominee or successful candidate before him, right? He was like, Bush sucked. He gave us Iraq. That was a really bad move. Romney sucked. He's a loser. Screw him. John McCain, crippled loser, not a war hero. He was captured, you know, like, all, like, it was, he won that party by attacking the people that had failed to deliver for them. And I mean, is that going to be the tactic that they use against Trump? Like, is DeSantis going to be like, I mean, what's he going to run on? Like, Trump brought you the vaccine. That's bad. Like, that seems to be the only game plan that I can see, like, any hint of.
And I think that's the thing, is like, on that side of the ballot, the issue is Trump. That's what you're voting for. Are you voting yes on Trump or no on Trump?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Maybe we should count our blessings on our little side of this. Like, yeah, you know, we can complain all day about how a socialist challenge has been shut out of the Democratic Party and all this shit. But at least we don't have one guy totalizing the entire machinery.
Exactly. I mean, even if, like, I mean, I know there's, like, all, like, you know, the sort of shadow.
It's very cold comfort. I know.
Yeah. But... and I know there's, like, always, like, you know, the shadow implications of, like, ooh, is this, like, actually happening under, you know, Biden? Is, like, Dark Brand and is all going according to, you know, plan with him? Like,
I mean, is he calling up the Pope? Yes.
Yes, he's calling up the Pope. Like, you know, the Queen is dead. You know, the Irishman has been triumphant. You know, it's all this stuff. Like, and, you know, it's fun, right? It's all in good fun. It's definitely preferable to having, you know, a full, you know, cult essentially running your party, which is what we're seeing over there, right? And I don't, like... I mean, I don't know. I know there's, like, talks, like, you know, is Pence going to run? I mean, like, listen, the guy...
I think Pence has thoroughly embarrassed himself at this point.
I mean, because he's, like, he can't even choose a lane, right? It's, like, even still, he's, like, well, you know, January 6th is actually the Lincoln Project's fault, because they had an ad where they said that I didn't have the power to do this, and it taught Trump that I did. It's like, you're insane. Like, you're like, you were literally almost murdered on behalf of the president that you still defend. Like, talk about being a cuck. Like, could you be any more, like, I couldn't imagine a state of my life where I could possibly be more embarrassed than it to be like Mike Pence in 2022.
I think, like, That again proves the thesis, right? Where it's like, I think Pence has, it's not that he can't choose a lane. I think it's, his lane is, how do I stay loyal to the machine? And I guess, you know, Pence was naive enough to think that Trump would not become the Republican machine or override it. And whether or not, you know, you do the thing of worshiping Mike Pence because he did the bare minimum of a American politician.
Of not breaking the law.
Yeah, of not breaking the law, right? Like, it just goes to show that, like, the conflict in the Republican Party is, are you with the machine? And you don't really get points for sticking with it. So your allegiance is either secret or not. Or are you loyal to Trump? There's no alternative. Okay, you can't, you're not going to cast off this stupid ass ideology and like believe anything else. You're definitely not switching over to the Democrats because of everything you believe. So Trump is
not
just
until they give me a candidate who believes everything I believe and they change the party to conform to my beliefs.
And that's the thing. Trump doesn't even believe the shit they believe.
No.
But Trump offers the alternative, which is him. It's yep. not. I never wanted to become like a guy who blames everything on Trump, but this is the one time I think we can pin everything on him. In the sense of, yeah, there is no. If Trump comes back in 2024, that means the Republican machinery has lost.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious to see if there will be some kind of emerging faction in the Democratic Party. I'm not convinced at this point that there will be a Bernie resurgence, you know, but what's the old Mao quote where every crisis is an opportunity?
I think something like that, yeah.
Yeah, the character for crisis is also the character for opportunity. I mean, you know, I'm not optimistic, but I'm not pessimistic either. I am watching from afar, as one can do at this point.
Yeah, and it's always interesting too, like in the immediate aftermath of an election, like we always kind of
and we waited a good amount of time. We waited a good amount of time before we did our reporting.
Yeah, that's fair, but there's always the joke that like you know, there's the never-ending election, right? That it's always like, you know, because Congress, especially the House, it's set up where it's just every election start, you know, marks the beginning of the next one and whatnot. And I think, you know, we're definitely seeing that, right? You know, immediately like every pundit is jumping on 2024. Does Trump come back? Does you know, Trump's our problem? We need to jettison him somehow. And it's like, I don't know how you're going to placate him, because I mean, the way I see it, I think it's very likely that, like, if he runs and, like, DeSantis beats him in the primary somehow, I think you end up with Trump carrying out that threat that he had in 2016. I think he runs third party. I think he just torches that party machine to the ground out of just sheer pettiness.
Let's talk about that at the micro level, too, right? Because that seemed to be a dynamic that played out in several local congressional races, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, it's almost neck and neck between the Democrat and the Republican, and the Libertarians basically split the vote just enough to edge out the Democrat into the victory.
Well, in some cases, right? I mean, I think some of those are coming from, you know, in both sides, right? I mean, I think, you know, if the Libertarian wasn't on the ballot, you know, someone like Warnock probably could have edged out Walker.
Possibly,
and whatnot. And, you know, that race wouldn't go to a runoff. But yeah, I mean, what's interesting, like, you know, the role of, like, particularly the Libertarian Party is, you know, kind of the more successful nominally party here in Congress. It's interesting seeing, or not in Congress, but in the electorate, you know, it's interesting to see, like, the role that they play. And it's kind of weird, too, where it's like, I feel like the Libertarian Party is, like, less visible than ever, but, like, they're getting votes, like enough votes that it's like, this is making a difference if you like do a one-to-one transfer to a different candidate.
Yeah. And I think the biggest time they had any high level coverage was 2016, right?
Yeah. And you know, with, God, what was Ron Johnson?
Not Ron. Jo-
no.
Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson. Yeah. With, you know, what is Aleppo? Which was such a weird gaffe that, like, the media just, like, latched onto, but...
I just... 2016 was such a cursed vibe by the time it got to the general, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, what, you had, like, Hillary with her, like, hubris.
Why don't they Pokemon Go to the polls?
Oh, my God. Don't make me do my Hillary impression. I mean, you had Hillary on that side. You had Trump. Whether or not people supported him, like, it was just a bizarre eldritch formulation that brought him to the forefront. And then The libertarians, I mean, they were, I don't know why they got as much coverage as they did. I think maybe because it was this weird desire to see if they were a serious alternative. And
it was just like, that was an election where it was just like, you know, I think that in a lot of ways, I think, like, just understanding of, like, presidents and presidential elections is just, like, deeply tainted by, like, Obama and his quality as a candidate, where it's like,
yeah,
we're like gas from presidents, right? Even, like, you know, and the stuff from Joe Biden, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's like, it's not as bad as Trump. It's probably, you know, similar in level to Bush, but because we had that, you know, one president who was like, you know, had read a book once in his life, could form a complete and coherent sentence. Like, because of that, people just have this lofty expectation for, you know, the president. And, like, as a candidate, right, everyone was excited about him. His first, you know, successful African-American candidate. His first, you know, like, you know, he had hope, you know, we change. Yes, we can. All that fun stuff. And, like, 2016 was this, like, man, everyone hates both of these candidates.
Right.
Where else can they look to vote?
And the funny thing about looking at the libertarian primary and the libertarian, like, memes I saw about it, it just came up because Facebook was a great cesspool for political memes at the time, right? I didn't get on Twitter until too late. But, even they shat the bed. Like, Gary Johnson looked more sane than these guys, but he was just like, I think, like, it was a question on climate change where he was just like, yeah, it's real, but we're not doing anything about it. So, I'm not going to worry about it, which was, like, just a bizarre, like, death drive ass answer for someone to give.
Yeah, kind of a very, like, nihilistic answer. Like,
yeah, he seemed pretty nihilistic. You know what I mean? Like, just the way his bizarre haircut, his weird mannerisms, like, he gives me, like, ambulance chaser lawyer vibes for sure. And then even, like, the Republican primary, like, the guys they had there was an insane selection. Like, there's a meme from one of the debates where, like, they asked, should driver's licenses be allowed? And everyone except Gary Johnson says no. In, like, the weirdest terms they can. One guy goes up to give a speech, gives up halfway through, starts doing a striptease. At, like, a national, like, nominating convention. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's an absolute mess. Like, you know, as mess. And I think that's, like, maybe part of, like, the fascination that has always been, like, existed with Trump, right? Is he sort of brings some element of that, right? Some of that, like, that outlaw politics, you know, spectacle that, like, you only get to see at, like, you know, these insane libertarian conferences. I mean, yeah, he never did, like, a striptease on stage yet. You know, I'm not going to rule it out of the cards.
No, but, no. There was the time he admitted he was bi. Oaks, I feel so good. I want to kiss all the women and all the men, too. Oh, my fucking God.
Oh, there's a time Joe Biden came out, too, though, to be fair.
I'm transgender.
Yeah, well, there's a time where he literally is like, because he always, that's just one of his speech idioms, right? He's like, when I came out and did this, but, like, he was talking, like, at a pride thing. He's like, when I came out, and he's like, yeah, when I came out. And, like, Anderson Cooper was there. And, like, he's like, oh, that would be news.
Oh, God. So, I mean, we've kind of run the gauntlet on some of this, on a candidate perspective. There's a couple interesting developments with like various ballot initiatives on various states. Maybe just as a general thing, we can start with the biggest one this year, abortion.
Yeah.
Abortion rights won out on the ballot.
Sure did.
Yeah. So before we get to Michigan, right? Like Kentucky had a bizarre one where like the language was so confusing you had to vote no to get the right. But okay. but basically, yeah, that one won out. So Kentucky got the right restored. Vermont as well. Vermont won swimmingly with like 77% or so.
Yeah.
Michigan Prop 3 was very successful. 57% won out. I'm trying to think.
California, I think.
California, Montana as well, too?
Possibly. I think so, yeah.
Let me see. Let me make sure I got this right. And they said Prop 3 in Michigan was confusing.
Yeah, and literally it was just like the language from Roe v. Wade, more or less. Like, and interesting too in Michigan, because it was Prop 3 and like all the proposals won. And it was interesting because like they all won by like a little bit more than Prop 3, but that's just because Prop 3, like abortion is just a more controversial issue, right? It doesn't like, you know, those other issues. Like, I don't think, you know, the first one I think was something about like it's, you know, Michigan was an outlier where you didn't actually have to report your personal finances in the state legislature, and this requires that. And then it also
imposed term limits, right?
A little bit. So, like, Michigan already had term limits for the state legislature. What this did was, before you had, I think, 3 House terms, 2 Senate terms, so you had 14 years. This made it so you have 12 years, but you can spend it wherever. So you could spend it all in one office, in theory. So that's kind of interesting. So, but, like, again, like, people saw term limits, was like, sweet. Hell yeah, I hate politicians. So that's kind of how that got passed. And then Prop 2, which I was a little surprised by, too, because there was an effort to sort of fight against it. And Prop 2 basically existed entirely to counteract an effort by Republican organizers to basically require voter ID, remove, like, affidavit-type voting, just tightened voting restrictions all around. And that couldn't get on the ballot because they forged a bunch of signatures because, you know, how else would you fight for electoral integrity than, you know, violating the rules of elections? But their intention was to get it on the ballot and not even have it voted on by, you know, the public, but just pass it through the state legislature.
What's the over-under on these two ballot initiatives? Do you think they are a step in the right direction for reform, or are they just more like complexity to add?
I think they're a step in the right direction. I think that, you know, there's some complexity. It definitely changes things. Like, I think Prop 2 notably gives, like, I think 6 extra days of early voting. Mm. That's going to change how campaigns are run, because, like, and I think, you know, I've seen one thing too where, like, I think this is an interesting thing that I don't necessarily know that the Republican Party is actually going to learn this lesson or not, but they're like, hey, we're getting killed on early ballots, which is like, I mean, would it matter when they're cast? I don't necessarily think so, other than the fact that they've polarized, you know, sort of connotation, right? Like, don't vote, like, because their party's been running on the idea that any ballot that's not cast on election day is illegitimate. So I don't necessarily know how they're going to cultivate. Which is
It's such fucking cope.
Yeah, it's like, it's just like, oh, well, we won on election day. That's all that matters. It's like, well, turns out
I wonder what the origin of that thinking is, because this is like somewhat unrelated, right? But like I had another like post-election conversation with a different group of friends, and I was, one of the things that gets under my skin is like how long our campaign cycles are in the United States.
Sure.
Like, we have year-long electoral cycles, and like let's say in the UK, for instance, your election period is like what, 2 months, if even?
Yeah, but, you know, at this rate, it's like every 2 months. So
I mean, that's true. That's also true. But like, I'm just wondering, like, if campaign seasons were shortened to like half the amount, let's say, or even like a quarter of the amount, right? you wouldn't have like the same weird shit that happened in 2016 where, like, for example, Hillary Clinton's popularity waning and then like rising up and then waning again. You have,
I mean, I will say, I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I think that it is kind of in that like pipe dream territory where it's this is not something that will ever like change, right? Because it's like, I could see, you know, one party, you can probably guess which one, maybe unilaterally disarming, like, yeah, we need to like pull back. But like in Clinton's case, right, it's the fact that you have just years of like, here's the Benghazi committee. Remember that time she proposed socialized medicine in this country? What a crazy bitch. You don't want her. Like, all, like, you're just years of that. Like, that's sort of the, like, the far end of the spectrum, right? Like, that is, like, the farthest, like, she's basically been on a campaign from the day she stepped in the Oval Office as the First Lady to the day, you know, she lost to Trump.
To our point, though, I think, like, of the various, like, state voting ballot initiatives, like, Michigan's Prop 2 was definitely, like, one of the better steps.
Yeah.
I think, like, other states had, like, requiring photo ID to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Nevada was an interesting one. They had a prop to establish open primaries and implement ranked choice voting.
Interesting. Yeah, I did see that.
And that one won out.
Yeah, ranked choice is interesting. So, like, it's only in a few places. I think Alaska's the big one, right? So we don't have results in for Alaska yet because of, you know, they got to go to round two. But, you know, it's interesting. And it was kind of fun, too, because I know a lot of Republicans Pelota, I can't remember how you pronounce her name, the Democrat from Alaska. But when she beat Sarah Palin and Begich last time, people, like, Republicans were like, but, like, Republicans won like 50% of the vote. How could this be? And it's like, but even in a first past the post system that the rest of the country's in, she still had more votes than the other two candidates.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it. She had 100,000 or so. Palin has 57. Begich has 51,000.
And that's right now. That's not the special election.
That is right now.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, likely she's probably going to win because, at least if like what happened in the special election holds, there's just not, they those Republican candidates aren't voting one to one for each other. And, like, and if they were going to, why would one of them just not run at all? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that's another example, like the party tearing itself apart. Right. You know, and it's like, that's not a Trump issue. That's, you know, Sarah Palin predated him.
Yeah. I'm looking at other ballot initiative things. Another weird one was like slavery was literally on the ballot in some states. Like, I think Louisiana had like a proposal for, like,
where did it fail?
I can't.
Because there was like five states that all had it, and one of them it failed in. I can't remember which one.
Let me see if it was Kansas. Hang on. I'm looking at the. For some reason, New York Times will let me look at the election breakdown. They won't let you look at anything else, but...
Yeah, the minute you click on a race, they're like, whoa, hold on a second. You gotta pay for that.
Yeah, I can't recall... This is definitely one of those episodes where I'm, like, running through, like, our DMs just to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I can't find it.
Yeah, but it's definitely, I mean, it's, it was so weird. Like, so I'm slightly confused as the origins of it. Like, I don't know if it's like a state constitutional thing that, like, allowed slavery. I mean, I assume it has to be somewhat tied to, you know, the amendment that actually overturned slavery here, which sort of, like, is kind of the genesis of the prison industrial complex, right? Because it says, like, if you're incarcerated, welcome back to bondage, basically, and not the fun kind. You know, so, like, it's kind of, it seems to be a legacy of that. It's interesting to see kind of, you know, that it's on the ballot. I don't know what inspired who to put that on there. It's very disturbing that there was, you know, any percentage of votes against it, even a low percent. But yeah, you know, slavery was on the ballot.
Yeah, and it's like, there are certain, like, understatements of this, like, renewed interest in, like, a tough-on-crime approach to politics.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think, like, that definitely may have played out in... Okay, hang on. Okay, I'm looking at the Louisiana stuff. I found it now. So, Constitutional Amendment 7... remove constitutional language allowing slavery as punishment. 39% voted yes, 61% voted no.
Yeah, I mean,
and I'm not sure like what the impetus was for that ballot initiative, but definitely with like the Deep South and just the way we've run our criminal justice system in that part of the country, but you know, as a whole, right? Like,
yeah,
what can be said about the way we, you know, exploit our prison populations? And I mean, there is understated stuff about how like prison labor is used to fuel certain aspects of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
There is understated shit about like this is the only example I've ever seen of it in my life, funny enough. This was Mardi Gras in New Orleans, 2019. After the parade, what do you think happens? Everyone shows up for the parade, then they head back to their hotel room or they go back to their place, whatever, right? That's most tourist experiences of it. I was over at a friend's home and, you know, watching the post-parade cleanup. After, you know, the place is cleared out, it's basically like a platoon of, I can't remember if it was state or federal prisoners, still in their jumpsuits, marching to pick up the trash as soon as they could. Many of them black, and there was like a guy on a horse in like a policeman's uniform, like, or a corrections uniform, corralling them along. And I'm just like, in my head, I'm like, I don't want to say anything, but this looks very sus.
Yeah, and I mean, even like, I mean, I know like no one would really like attack like community service sentences and stuff like that, but like even that sort of kind of has like, when you really think about it, there's some uncomfy like associations with it when you really think about it, right? When it's like, right, these people are being forced to do that kind of stuff, and it's like, oh, like, you know, it's like, yeah, like the streets need to be cleaned by somebody, I guess, but you know, does it have to be by someone who is, you know, not getting any benefit or anything like that? Like,
yeah, normally you'd get paid for something like that. I don't even know if they get paid for that. Does it help them with parole or anything? Like, I don't know. You would hope, but I highly doubt it.
Yeah, I'm pretty skeptical too.
Ugh. Some better stuff. Let's see. Drug policy did also pick up in some states. So, Maryland legalized cannabis. Missouri legalized cannabis. North Dakota voted no. Arkansas voted no. Colorado, ahead of the game, decriminalized and regulated certain psychedelics.
Yeah, and there was...
And South Dakota got it on the ballot, but voted no.
Well, what was weird too with Colorado is they legalized psychedelics, but they did not allow the delivery of alcoholic beverages. That lost. Which is like this weird, like, I mean, Colorado, I'm looking at this. They had like, God, it looks like they had like a million ballot proposals almost. But like, I thought that was funny, the juxtaposition of like, we're into like some hard shit.
Yeah, this is Proposition 122. We only have three in fucking Michigan. They had what? Not okay. I'm gonna look at
in Michigan. There was three statewide, and there were some millages and whatnot.
Yeah, based on your locality.
Yeah.
Let me see Colorado. Hang on.
I'm sure, like, the 1 is just some type of, I'm sure, like, yeah, the 12 just has to be something. I'm not sure what it was. Because, like, here it was, like, technically proposal, like, 22-1, 22-2, 22-3, but...
Oh, man. Okay. They had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 proposals. 3 of which were amendments, I think.
That's a lot. But yeah, I mean, like, so, you know, it's weird too, right, in this whole sort of national scene. And I know, like, you know, Fox News made a big deal about, like, you know, this national crime wave and stuff like that. And it's, I don't know, it's weird. Like, I don't feel like that was, like, part of, like, this national conversation, but I did not really get the implication that it was really, like, resonating with people much.
Well, I think it's also, like, it's a generational thing too. Because it's not just Fox News, right? You'll also see it in like what are supposedly Democratic havens, like San Francisco local politics. Yeah. You see this come up a lot. Miami local politics. You see this come up a lot.
It came up a lot in New York this time.
In New York as well. Right. Where I think there's this influx of capital or professionals coming into these cities. And as a result of things like gentrification, GIMBY and NIMBYism, and I don't know, the past 30 years of neoliberalism, like, you have the immiseration of the cities, and then you have capital being produced in certain parts of it, but none of it's being distributed equitably. And you have, again, rising housing costs, jobs are a big concern, all that shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, based on where you live, or in our case, because like in the Midwest, I don't see it come up as often, but I'd say with older people, it resonates harder. With our age cohort, I don't see it come up unless someone's like already right wing, for example.
Yeah. And it's weird too, because like at least this cycle, it seems like when it came up, it was like primarily pointing at like, look at these homeless people.
Right.
And like, it was like a proxy for like crime. And it's like, well, like, is it like, I mean, it was coded this time in ways that I don't think was super useful.
100%. 100%. I don't know. That is the tricky thing about election coverage for me at this point, is like, when you don't have like your direct buy-in, aside from like, okay, I'll vote for like this ballot proposal, but I'm not enthusiastically voting for anything else, right? Mm-hmm. Finding out who the different cohorts are gets a little tougher because you don't interact with them as aggressively or as often.
Sure.
But yeah, I think also, yeah, with Michigan, I think Prop 3 and abortion rights just ended up being the biggest thing.
So yeah, I mean,
kind of spared some of that.
Yeah, and it's interesting too. I mean, you look at turnout; it beat 2018, which was a really high midterm turnout year. It didn't beat 20, which is not too shocking. But yeah, I mean, it brought people out to vote, you know, one way or the other, and primarily for. I mean, one thing too, like, I mean, there was pictures and videos of, like, you know, like at MSU. Students were lined up past midnight at U of M. I think the last person cast his ballot there, or her, I don't necessarily remember who, that like 2:19. Like, these people were in line, and like polls closed at 8, right? Like, you know, but if you were in line, you still got to vote, and like people were lined up. Like, the youth turned out in ways that like were not expected at all.
So youth turnout is higher on average overall.
Yeah.
Okay. And how's turnout looking at just in general compared to, like, for the whole country, if you know?
Let me see if I can find that real quick. It seems like it's mixed.
Of course, well, they want my money.
God damn it.
That's like, I was like, oh, I've exceeded my one free article. So in a few places, it's less, like West, it looks like West Virginia, less turnout, Tennessee, less turnout. Nationwide, generally, it was on level or exceeded. So Michigan exceeded, Maine succeeded, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Colorado, Oregon. I can't see the south of the nation because of the paywall. So, yeah, I mean, it really kind of depended. I don't know the exact correlation with what was on the ballot in these states. Pennsylvania, higher turnouts. New Hampshire, Vermont, South Dakota, Iowa, like... Yeah, I mean, I'm sure those Iowa voters weren't excited to, like, you know, vote for, you know, Chuck Grassley for another 6 years. I'm sure other stuff influenced turnout there.
I know I added certain, like, candidates we might have been able to riff on the outline, but something that we were riffing about was, what is it? Chuck Grassley is literally older than Social Security numbers.
Yeah, older than Social Security numbers, older than chocolate chip cookies.
Older than sliced bread.
He's slightly younger than sliced bread.
Oh, shit, my bad.
My favorite, and it just because of the absurdity of it, it's obviously not accurate, but it was like Chuck Grassley, who was born on Pangaea, will be representing his state for 6 more years. And then there was one of those, like, you know, as Twitter is wont to do now, there was one of those fake verified accounts that was, like, impersonating him, where it's like, I've actually been dead for the past 4 years, and then we're just weekend at Bernie's letting it up here.
Oh, God. That's been the most, that's been the crazy thing about election coverage this cycle, too, is, like, Twitter has been, like, a repository for, like, political coverage and media as of late.
And I was shocked at how, like, I thought the election night we were going to see the place collapse in real time. Like, I was convinced you were going to get, like, people impersonating, like, Nate Silver and just posting bullshit. And we didn't. I was really shocked. Like, it's most of the trolls are just like, I'm Elon Musk and I'm going to say something really stupid. And then I don't know if you saw this, but, like, Elon Musk had, like, just attacked Ed Markey today.
Oh, God, I saw that.
Yesterday. And, like, Markey's literally on, like, the communications committee. It's like, what a fucking idiot. Like, it's like, what would maximize my chance of getting investigated?
Between, like, the Twitter nonsense and then, like, this weird crypto breakdown that's happening, are tech CEOs okay?
You know, it depends on, you know, which blue check you're asking. Are they, you know, verified because they pay $8?
Did you get the blue check because you produce cultural value or because you paid?
Yeah. It's been kind of fun watching that all implode. Deservedly implode.
Honestly, where are you heading if Twitter falls? Because I don't think I'm going. I don't know if I'm following anywhere.
God, I don't know. I mean, and it's
the
weird.
The podcast words. Blind sounds so fun.
I mean, it's weird because, like, I mean, I probably spend an unhealthy amount of time on Twitter and whatnot.
I mean, me too, but yeah.
You know, but, like, there's a certain reprieve you get from it. And, you know, I used Tumblr in, like, high school a bit, and I've described it as, like, woke 4chan.
Yep, that is it. That is 100% it.
Because it's like Twitter, like, I mean, yeah, you obviously have some people who are, like, joke accounts and things like that and whatnot, but, like, you have a little bit less, like, you have more people willing to just be like, yes, this is, you know, this is me, this is who I am, this is my professional, semi-professional identity. And I think it's sort of normalized certain, like, you know, sort of a blend of, like, recreation and professionalism that I think is good. Like, I think it's healthy that, you know, people are a little bit more, you know, open with, like, their interests and stuff like that. And, you know, it's, mm-hmm. you know, maybe in some cases, you know, do you want to see their porn likes? Probably not, but shit happens.
But like Tumblr was just like, it's mostly anonymous. No one is like themselves there. They're all some type of character.
But everyone needs to prove that like they're knowledgeable on something. You know what
I mean? Yeah, and very specifically, and like I use like the woke label because it's like, you know, it's kind of in that more like culture's war sphere, right? It's like, yes, like, you know, it was kind of, you know, like an oppression party at times where it was like, you know, this is 100%. How like gender identity, and like not saying that like gender identity and stuff's not important or anything like that, but like that was like all that like of any remote substance was discussed on there, right? It wasn't like about economic justice or anything like that. It's just like, well, I identify as, you know, this particular collection of labels, you know, fair enough, but it's not like, you know, like it, give me something a little bit more, right? You know, no one, I mean, I can't say no one's trying to stop you from identifying that way, but you know, no one here is preventing you from doing that. So like, it's just kind of, I don't know. I don't think Tumblr's it. Mastodon, from what I understand, is really bad. I think I've heard I
tried making an account, and then immediately I met with, what server do you want to join? And I'm like, so you mean I'm not dumped in with everyone else? I have to pick.
Yeah, I've heard like it takes like, someone said that like, it took like 6 hours to just send a message. I'm like, what?
Oh, fuck that. I'm not joining. Fuck this. Like,
excuse fuck that. Me? Like, that sounds useless. And you know, obviously we haven't, like, you haven't even like flirted, like going back to like Facebook.
Like, no, I deleted my Facebook. I deleted my Instagram. Dude, feels like pure fucking heroin.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I've never tried it. I'm just saying it, like, it feels really good. I don't know what it is about Facebook and Instagram, right? But with Instagram, it's like this idea of creating this perfect self for like the display to the world. That just feels weird.
Oh, it's, I mean, it's even more shallow than Tumblr.
It's even more shallow. And then like Facebook is like, one, it's been colonized by everyone older than 50, right?
Yeah. Which is funny, cause like that had been an issue. And I think like, not to relate to 2016, but I think 2016 was really when that came to a head, right? You know, we talked, you know, there's been a lot of talk about like, you know, Facebook misinformation and stuff like that. But it's like, I think that was like, just like where you had battles, right? You know, I know like some of my cousins would regularly get into huge fights because one was very liberal and the other was ultra conservative.
And then you would have like the 50 common threads where like,
yep,
either it ends with them like trying to be nice, or it just ends with like, oh, and by the way, your mother's a whore. Like, it just, it's, it never ends.
Well, that actually was exactly how one ended, basically. Oh,
fuck
so.
Me. Okay, okay.
Well, and like, I mean, I have a family that's like big enough where like, you know, very realistically, you know, like, I wouldn't say I know everyone in my family on like a personal level. Like, I, you know, I've seen them like a few times in some cases. You know, the core of it, I see a lot, but whatnot. But like, you know, it's big enough that there are some people who are, you know, the black sheeps that are just sort of voluntarily the black sheeps. Like, yes, they're sort of on the outskirts and whatnot. But it's, you know, like, yeah, I think that's like, it's been colonized by not only that, but it's like, I mean, algorithmically, it's just like meme pages. Like, that's like, I don't see
all the good ones got kicked off.
Yeah, all the good ones got kicked off. It's just like, oh, hey, here's like what low rent thing can I say about a popular TV show? You know what I mean? It's just like, that's all it is. And like,
did you
like,
know scrolling... in Marvel's The Avengers, Iron Man puts on a suit?
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm scrolling through Facebook right now. Like, there's a Game of Thrones thing that like, you know, anyone with two brain cells that watch the show could put together. Like, you know, there's
it's all babies for like, symbolism. Oh my God.
Yeah. And it's just like, I mean, I'm seeing like, and like ads just inundate the place. And like Twitter's gotten bad about that too. But like, it's like Facebook was first where it was just like, we have sold your data to the highest bidder. Have fun with this.
Oh my God. I think, you know what? I take the passing of Twitter as a bittersweet occasion, you know? I think, you know, it's time to, like, fair. You know, get your mutuals, find a Discord server, you know, just so that you have another place to gather if shit hits the fan. But, you know, while Twitter's like a fun site because, yeah, you do get to like meet people with common interests and riff, and like, it's cool in that sense. It's also just like, it has produced some of the most diseased takes I've ever seen. And it's allowed the class of...
Hey, I can't say it's produced the most diseased takes I've ever seen, because the New York Times literally posted a piece today saying that... was it New York Times? No, The Atlantic. That DeSantis's COVID gamble paid off. The dude literally, like people literally died. But hey, his political ambitions are in great shape. Like, what?
Oh, my fucking God. I think you have a point. It's like, no, the disease takes were already there. We just saw it on display.
Yeah, they're just synthesized through Twitter now.
Maybe there's a net good to this. Maybe I'm trying to see the silver lining in Twitter collapsing.
Like the net, like the silver lining is that like it probably will for like it was probably a bane to my productivity. You know what I mean? Like it's probably had the negative implications on my life that I have lacked the discipline to take care of. I'll freely admit that. But
whom among us?
Yeah, you know, I'll admit that, you know, there's that silver lining, but I'll be a little sad to see it go. I mean, there's no clear alternative. I mean, Reddit's obviously not. I mean, that's kind of the same.
Oh, fuck that. Yeah, I mean, shit, what was I gonna say? I just had a Brandon moment. Yeah, no, that thought is gone. I don't know where that thought went.
Well, you know, just as, you know, the fleeting of Chuck Grassley's lifespan, so goes some thoughts, you know.
We are all doomed to become Chuck Grassleys in our own time. The question is, do we accept it with grace, or...
Do we welcome the pigeons?
Dear God.
Into our home.
That's the challenge, ain't it?
Sure is.
I guess, I don't know. I feel like we've thoroughly exhausted our outline at this point. We've been at it for like an hour and a half. I did want to just say fuck JD Vance.
Well, that was another one too. I was thinking, like, it's like, because they're like, oh, all Trump's candidates lost. It's like, well, this lunatic won. Like, are we going to ignore that?
Vance was an interesting one, right? Because didn't he make his... Didn't he make his name like being an anti? I mean, he had a column and everything before then, but he kind of positioned himself as like an anti-Trump guy, and then took Peter Thiel's money, and then has been trying to position himself as a base nationalist or whatever. But
yeah,
I there's just something so gross to me about a guy who like made a whole career off of being ashamed that he was Appalachian and. Is now like trying to play up that identity to win it, well, to have one in Ohio. And honestly, Ohio, guys, you got to step it up in the Midwest game, okay? Like, you guys are literally next to Indiana, the worst performers in the Midwest. You just got to step it up a little bit, man.
Yeah, you know, I know you had that Twitter space where you were like talking about how bad, like, you know, what's the worst state in the Midwest, and like, I mean, Ohio's the go-to one, right? But it's like, I mean, I remember the first time I went to Indiana, and I'm like, this is a different kind of place. This place is built different.
There's something about Indiana to me where it's like they took the civic religion aspect of America and they saw themselves as like building a new Republican style like society. But there's just like particles of fascism like latent throughout. I don't know how to say it.
One of the weirdest things about Indiana that I noticed was like when I was on the highway there, and it was like the speed limit for both, you know, commuters and trucks was the same. I'm like, you know, man, only in a state that elected Mike Pence as their governor would Capitol have to move at the same speed as everyone else.
Shit.
Or everyone have to move at the same speed as Capitol, like.
I don't know.
Here we get to speed around him.
And it's crazy to think that, like, it's, like, it's dismissed as this Republican stronghold, right? But there are these weird histories where, like, Eugene V. Debs was from, was he from Des Moines? Yeah, he was from Des Moines. Oh, no, he was from Terre Haute, my bad. And then, you had, like, weird, like, socialist utopian communities, and even, like, you have all the makings of, like, just the rest of the Midwest, but with its weird history as being, like, a Klan hub and, like, just the rise of Republican politics in Indiana, it's, I don't fucking know.
There's a wild place.
There's a bizarre vibe, and I mean, that's not to say that any state in the country is comparatively better. You know, it's all on stolen land. It's this fucking horrible system, blah, 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 but I don't
know. We can all agree Florida's objectively the worst.
Florida feels cursed to me because it's like you took the Caribbean and you just put the suburbs over it.
There's something literally over like the, like, you know, literally over the Atlantic too. Like literally, like, some suburbs just literally built into the ocean and, you know, wrecked by a hurricane and just, it's very much just like human ingenuity will find its way to, like, invade every aspect of nature. That is like the story of Florida.
Yeah, like, not to be a dirty tree hugger or something, but there's something demonic about it, you know what I mean? Just taking American suburbia and just defiling natural beauty to, like, put it in.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think I've gotten out all my post midterm takes. Anything else that we should consider or anything that we missed?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think we got, like, the big, I mean, I guess a special shout out to our boy Fetterman beating Dr. Oz.
Our big boy.
Yeah, you know, here's for more Midwest ogres making it into office. Yeah, I mean, that was exciting to, like, you know, have that happen, I think. You know, it's kind of cool. Like, yeah, he was kind of more of a, you know, I think at times it felt like he was kind of a meme candidate, but, like, hey, you know, he seems to genuinely support a lot of the stuff that, you know, we like, and yeah, like, cool. Like,
there is some stuff about his record that does bug me. He's not perfect,
sure. Yeah,
of all the candidates to try the meme approach, he definitely won out. And like we said, he
really beat his opponent, who tried the same approach just really badly.
I think, you know what, there is just one fundamental law to all of this. If you're going to riff, it better be funny.
Yeah.
I think that holds true.
It's the universal truth.
All right. I think editing is going to be pretty light for this one. I think I just got to delete my brain farts. So anything else you want to... it's been a minute since I've done the outro. Give me a sec.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we need the outro.
We need the outro, and then we go to plugs. 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay. Well, this has been another episode of Greenhouse Gaslighting. You can find all the links to our social media in the description below. I'll also include Josh's social media and his other project, Monster Pop, which is a great podcast about pro wrestling. So I'll have their social media in the link below. Anything else you want to plug before we get going, Josh?
You know, I think that's about it. You know, I think, you know, thanks for listening. We had, I think, some fun getting some stuff off our chest about the midterm and, you know, the state of American politics in 2022 period. Definitely a really interesting race. You know, it'll be kind of, I'm sure we'll be covering plenty of the consequences for a while.
Yeah, time will tell if this is, you know, just another mere occurrence of events, or if this is a dark omen of events to come. But try not to worry about that. All right. Thanks again for tuning in, dear listeners. Bye-bye.